When you go skiing.
I'd say it'd work almost, you know, for anybody.
The old bones ain't built for it.
Hey, what do you guys have to chair the meeting with?
Jay is.
Before us is sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 371, an act creating the Alaska Marine Highway Authority. And are there any witnesses that wish to testify on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
You have, Mr. Medcalf.
Commissioner Hannah said to be over to the committee, but he will testify on this.
Fine.
Yeah, that North South Marine, if you have any other people to testify on this, then that's an all fair.
All right, Captain, and Mr. Clary, do you have testimony on this bill you wish to make?
Not this morning.
I see. And no one else has testimony, but Mr. Harris wants to testify with backup from you fellows.
Yes, sir. Right.
Well, we'll recess for 10 minutes and see if he might be here in that period of time without objection. I can understand that the...
What time did were they told to come here, Mr. Chairman?
We were told to come here at 8.
Well, then why aren't you here ready to go?
Well, we're ready to go.
Let's go then.
Well, if you have testimony, Captain, I would be happy to accept. Call me back.
The only problem is
time.
Time. Because we probably can't get together again for some time.
We won't, because it's going to be picking up all that Capitol News stuff. Yeah. You don't have the time. I'm going to be out of town 2 weeks. We won't have enough.
If you got some testimony, you might as well get it in.
I'm not interested in the subject, so there's going to be three of you working on it, huh?
Bill and I.
Well, let me come back to order. And Captain, I'd be pleased to hear from you. And if Mr. Harris has something that's slightly redundant, we'll understand on the circumstance.
Chairman, my name is Bill Hudson. I'm the Director of the Division of Marine Highway Systems, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And I've reviewed the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 371, which I believe is the current one. Prior to really getting into this, I've done a little bit of analysis of comparable agencies. We had a meeting with the managers of all of the other West Coast ferry operators approximately a month and a half ago, Washington State Ferries, British Columbia Ferries, the Golden Gate ferry system, Lois Atchison, who is the sole owner of the Coho, the old Blackball Express. The British Columbia ferry system has a Crown Corporation type of administration and has had it now for approximately 2 years. Prior to that time, they were somewhat similar to the Alaska Marine Highway. And the Washington State Ferries have a little bit different form of administration. Harris just arrived. Nick of time.
There he is.
The Washington State Ferries operate under a toll authority underneath the Highway Commission. And of course, they derive their revenues and their operating parameters in a different fashion even than we do. And prior to that commission, it's my understanding that they had been a private corporation, the Blackwell Express, and were absorbed by the port. I think it's probably pertinent before we really get into this thing that I step back and let Commissioner Harris.
Fine. I've
talk to my assistant here.
Commissioner Harris, thank you for coming. I know you're busy this morning. Conflicts, please proceed in any way you wish.
Well, I first off should say that we have looked at the question tentatively of an authority over all of the revenue earning transportation systems in the state. We haven't really got into it in depth at this point in time, but we've looked at the international airports and the marine highway system particularly as those things that might fit under an authority. Generally, the bill that we have here, the way it's proposed, I think that we would recommend that if the bill were to pass out, that it would be composed of two people from communities that are connected into the existing system and two from other areas of the state. That would be one possible amendment. The authorities are generally composed.
Could I just ask you one other thing? Mm-hmm. How about says the commissioner should be a director ex officio with voting privileges. Mm-hmm. Could we put that you or your designee?
I would think it would be Commissioner of Transportation or a designee would be most appropriate.
Because then you could be there whenever you wanted to, or if you had to be here, and then you could designate.
I think Senator Ray is that's a good idea. I think also though he should never be able to completely delineate his responsibility. It should be his responsibility with a designee
acting in behalf of the commissioner.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. With no tenure at all.
It gives you the control over it still.
Okay. With full voting rights.
You may proceed.
The one thing that I believe that this kind of a body would provide for more continuity in operation of such systems as proposed here. Generally, I think authorities are established to operate out of their revenues. The marine highway system, certainly, I don't see at any time in the future where it would accomplish that. Right now, in the transportation systems of the state of Alaska, generally their income, the marine or the aviation fuel tax is paying for about 50% of the maintenance and operations of aviation facilities. The motor fuel tax is paying for about 50% of the maintenance and operation of the highway systems of the state. And the earnings of the marine highway system are paying for about roughly 50% of the operating costs of the marine highways. And the only thing where we have a fairly bright picture is the international airports, where they are we're experiencing a $2 to $3 million a year net off the earnings of the international airports. So it does cause considerable problem how, in our mind, as we would approach it, where we'd put all the enterprise type functions under an authority. But of course, speaking to this bill, there would, as far as I can see at this point in time, there would always be need of an appropriation. I think that would be true until we have a much greater market than it exists in Alaska today. The population base just will not support the system that would give it the earning levels that would allow it to operate within income.
Doesn't this provide that, that's the only thing that they have?
This bill provides that it should provide a budget from the legislature. I think that while it would provide more continuity in its operating policies and so on, perhaps in the existing system, I don't think it would take it out of the system, out of politics at all. In fact, the authorities authorities become a political body in themselves, and very much so. They become, at times anyway, authorities become very much of a political body and exercise an influence that's independent of the political bodies as we know them in the state, generally, other than the fact that we do have several authorities, and I think that our experience has been that they tend to operate independently, although they certainly are subject to appointment by a governor. I think that we would find a lot of political influence being exercised by an authority. That's essentially all I have on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Don't you find that there's a lot of political pressure put on it now without the authority?
So certainly, you know, that's, it's all part.
You get the input from the people, and the people are responsible for at least you'll get that direct input rather than just whenever you want to receive it.
Is Mr. Ray, Senator Ray, question, is there any place here that prohibits the authority from hiring, lobbying, and doing that type of activity to further strengthen this position? Robert Moses and terrifying problems with the New York Port Authority and then the overall authority that, which he invested in.
They got pretty broad power. Do all acts and things necessary to be desirable to carry out power expressly granted and necessarily implied in this chapter. That's pretty wide.
They can do virtually anything.
And the domain, acquire, hold, use, and dispose of its income and revenue, funds and money. Make offices any place, enforce bylaws and regulations.
And, or, Mr. Minister, would you get a complete sectional analysis of this by the attorney so we have it regardless of this position? Do you have a portion?
I wasn't particularly after, but I will ask the commissioner a question. I was pondering whether I want to or not. I'm trying to figure out, you're just kind of maybe on this. I can't figure out whether your testimony was yes or no. Is this one
I think that
so-so situations that might be either yes or no?
Well, I would say that it isn't even so-so as far as, I think that constituted the way we are in this state government, that I would not favor a bill of this nature. I think that the system we have provides a more direct line of authority and responsibility to the governor, and that's the elected official, and that's the way we're constituted generally in this state government.
However, however, that's where the philosophical difference arises. Is we believe that you should be responsible to the people and not the governor. That's where the problem is, Don, and that's where it's always been and always will be as long as you take that attitude too.
Well, of course, I think that governors rise and fall on how the responsibility is shown and actions taken. And that's the way I've always felt about the system, you know, as far as the philosophical approach to it.
I think that answers my question.
Are there further questions of the commissioner? Are there any questions of the commissioner? Does the do you have any questions, Commissioner Barney? Does anybody else wish to testify? Captain, do you wish to testify?
I'll just finish what I was saying, and that is that we've looked over the system, various types of systems, and as the manager of the system, certainly the single most thing that is necessary to a manager is direction. And the present form, I receive a very consistent, solid direction from my commissioner. Certainly in a corporate type of, or an authority type of management, I would receive the same guidance from that particular body. The system can be run, I think, in either form. Communications with the public is certainly able at the present time to be expanded upon, to be improved upon. Public input is a vital concern, I think, to a system that is so service-oriented and so critically necessary to a lot of people. And in general, my commissioner's policy is basically the policy that I would have as an operator. We can operate it any way you like.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, if I understood Commissioner Harris correctly, we fund from the general fund about 50% of the operation of the marine highway system, roughly?
Yeah, it earns about 50% of its operating budget per year.
How does this compare with some of the other authorities you were talking about, the Washington State, and if there is any difference, what factors would contribute to it?
Well, both the Crown Corporation of British Columbia Ferries and the Washington State Ferry Systems operate under a relatively heavy subsidy of one sort or another. Washington State Ferries, I believe, cost something in the neighborhood of, say, $42 million, and they earn approximately $22 million, and they derive their subsidy in various fund receipts. They get one-tenth of 1 cent of every gallon of gasoline that's sold throughout the state. That goes to them as operating expenses. They receive a portion of their revenue or operating expenses as a cast-off from the tolls, bridges that are in operations in the Puget Sound area. And they also go to the legislature and receive a actual subsidy for that amount of their operating expense, which cannot be derived through these various other fund sources. The British Columbia ferry system is the largest volume-wise, operating principally between Vancouver and Victoria and the one vessel, Queen Prince Rupert, on up to Prince Rupert. And she's currently losing something in the neighborhood of $30 to $40 million a year. It was up to $70 million before they went into the Crown Corporation. It wasn't the fact that they went into the Crown Corporation that made the difference. It was that they finally were able, under their socialistic type of administration, to actually increase the fares, in some cases 300%. So, in answer to your question, every one of the systems, including the Golden Gate Ferry system, even the private mass transit operator from Vancouver, they call it C-Bus, all of those ferry systems require a subsidy of some sort. So we're not unique in that respect.
In your studies of these other systems, is there any evidence that would indicate that it would be more efficient to run it with something like this versus by the state or the government or some other mechanism?
It's difficult coming on fresh after something is already established and not seeing it grow from one to the other type of thing. I don't think I can answer your question.
Okay.
I have a question, Senator, around the table. We've gone to bonding, GO bonds, for ferry construction, and that is the cheapest way to do it. I'd hate to see us go into revenue bonding or something that was generated out of the ferry system without and pay more interest, because that would be just a hidden way of charging people less and more. I'm wondering if we shouldn't put together. I don't see anything here.
There's nothing in about revenue bonds.
I think that we should have a mechanism why it would, how a report would go to the legislature citing not only the accomplishments but the needs. And then the legislature should be tied into requesting bonding from time to time for further development or appropriations for further development, capital costs. Well, what do you think about that as an amendment?
I think you said it right in there, then.
I don't know. I'm just looking for it.
The authority shall submit its annual budget to the legislature, so that would be the capital budget was right in there with the operating budget, too.
So you got to say capital improvement means a project for construction rehabilitation, unless the context otherwise. Anyway, you have no objection to the legislature drafting. In other words, the only way that they could increase the facility would be through going to the legislature for it.
I have no objection to that at all. And in fact, I have the objection now of the present system, and that's I think that's where the argument comes in, that they don't even listen to what the legislature says.
I agree with you.
We've got a question.
That's where the argument
is. Annual report of some sort, but that isn't good enough. Really have to come to them for something. They do have to come to them for budget.
Well, you have to come and just like the Board of Regents or the schools or International Airport or anything else. Everything has to come to the legislature to find out where the money is. And at that time, if they don't make the report, then what is it?
They
don't get the money.
You have the floor.
I was wondering if it is the intent here to make sure that their capital improvements come from state appropriations and therefore have the ability that they will be geo-bonded.
Right.
Which I think we all agree on.
Right.
I just wonder if there isn't a weakness on page 3.
Where's that then?
On Article 2, page 3, line 13. If it isn't on item 5, if it isn't written too broadly, acquire, hold, use, and dispose of its income, revenue, funds, and money. If that may not be written so broadly that when they ask for a geo bond on a new ferry, that they would say, well, under 1970-055, you have the powers to go ahead and bond that as your authority. It doesn't really spell it out, but it looks like it might be broad enough that might need narrowing there so that we know they aren't to borrow money. That's what I'm trying to say. Looks to me like that could cover the borrowing of money by the authority, and I'm sure that in the interior, that would be interpreted as saying, well, get your own revenue bonds instead of going GO. And that's going to cost us all. If that's true, we might look at that.
You can look at that. That isn't the intent of it, John.
I think I can see it's drafted.
Would the administrative assistants have prepared properly in context an amendment that would say that, without objection of the committee, the annual report to the legislature, this is approximately, including operation, profit losses, and recommended needs, with then define that all capital improvements of substance will go to GO bond. That means it's got to come back to legislature. If you can get that paragraph ready for us for the next meeting. With any further questions?
Yeah, the capital improvement that has to go by bonds. There's a lot of capital improvements they put on there that they don't go to
bonds. No, the substance.
Well, of substance, what is it? What's of substance to you is, well, put new construction.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
New construction or...
I think
dollar amount on it now?
Lengthening, yeah, we can put a dollar amount.
I don't know. What do you think?
It seemed to me today $1 million might not have to go to bond anymore, but Jesus, it sure have to be the multi-million dollars putting these stretches.
I don't know that I think that each legislature should consider that as the financial picture of the state changes. If you don't need language.
But I think you should go to the legislature for, say you want to build two new ferries and you've got some kind of a cash flow that allows you to commit and then you gotta go to your own revenue bonds or something, but I don't want that to happen at this stage of development, the legislature's fine. That means you report to legislature with recommendations for a new construction.
John, the only way that they can, maybe we should amend it, say, acquire, hold, use, and dispose of its appropriation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That'll take care of that.
Yes.
Then you're knocking out the income and the revenue.
The income, this language might tend to dedicate the income. And I don't think that constitutionally you can do that.
Does that make sense, just put out?
Sure, all funds for the general fund come back out to
the appropriation.
That's a dandy. On line 13, page 3, prepare an amendment that, would you like to reword it somewhere?
Acquire, hold, use, and dispose of its appropriation.
We could have a little intent, even if there's any question. Revenues come to the general fund and unless it's appropriation.
All revenues go to the general fund, except in a revolving fund or something like that, unless it's in a revolving fund.
Any further questions?
Yeah, I had a question that I've been meaning to ask, it's a little bit off the subject. What is the life expectancy of a ferry boat, total life, and what plans are made, being made to replace some of the earlier boats?
Life varies depending upon the routes and the voyage and the seas that they operate in, the miles that they have to get underway, the dockings that they have to perform, and then obviously the general maintenance that they receive. These ferry vessels should operate for 25 years, 20 to 25 years. Many of the components are already beginning to become obsolete and are requiring special fabrication, such as spindle shafts. A lot of the pumps no longer able to get parts for those things. So obsolescence is one of the first things that sets in. So there's a constant replacement after about 13 or 14 years, which our fleet is at the present time. The vessels with some attention, the hulls are very good, so I would expect to get a long life out of the hulls and the framings and things of that nature. The interest of what are we doing about the future, the 79 budget does have funds in there for the preliminary engineering and design work, I believe, for to start the ball rolling on a replacement for the Tustamina. It's obviously the one vessel that receives the greatest wear and tear and is going to be, I think, the first one that will become a safe operator of heavy seas in, say, within the next 7 to 8 years. And the process requires approximately 5 years in advance. We have not, to this point in time, at any rate, established a replacement plan for any of the other vessels. We have, I think, probably adequate peak summer capacity at the present time and certainly over capacity in winter time. We are trying to concentrate more on rebuilding the worn out portions of the vessel as it is now, that is the hotel. Matanuska, the whole hotel is worn out. The pipes are rotted behind the panelings, the toilet fiberglass is going fritz, most of the toilets don't work anymore in the public areas. And you're rapidly reaching the point where this can't continue in operation, serving the public with that kind of a system. So using federal funds, we stretched it to get the added capacity, which didn't really cost more fuel, and not a great deal more labor. And so that was one way of, if you will, expanding to meet the summer, the higher summer needs, and at the same time to change out the entire hotel and to take care of all the modern new laws. The Coast Guard, every year, comes in with new laws that relate to structural standards and machinery standards and things of this nature. So we're addressing the fleet by trying to rehabilitate the vessels to get perhaps another 5 to 10 years operations out of them. I think with the Matanuska, if we were able to re-engine that vessel, we'd probably operate it for 30 years or another 15 years.
How many? Is there any truth to the rumor that it's going to be delayed?
I think Commissioner could probably speak to it. He just came from Portland. I haven't been down there.
There's more than rumor. That vessel will probably be at least 30 days late coming out of that. That's what we were advised by the contractor. They had planned, they had hoped to pick up a week in the welding in of the mid-body, and they lost 3 weeks. And what they say is because of inclement conditions, and the very worst of the winter weather hit them right at that time. And they said that they got that thing off the dry dock 3 weeks late because of that reason more than any other single thing. They said that they may have lost as much as 2 more weeks because of the winter in the East Coast and delivery of specific items off of the East Coast that may delay it. But hopefully they'll pick up some of that time. Another part of what I think we're being hit with is that they would like to have had us authorize them to go into a lot of overtime, which we didn't do. I think that as a result of not doing it, we might find that they won't be so far behind as they tended to indicate to us. But, the scheduled, as it now stands, appears that they're 3 weeks to a month behind.
Any other questions?
Well, I've got one.
Yes, you have four.
It's a little off subject, but within this authority, I wonder if the chance for it isn't here. What's the present status of tying the, at least on once a week service, to tie it southwest and southeast, tie it on Marine Highway together? Will something like the authority help, or is there any plans underway? I know it calls for a new major vessel to cross the Gulf, and could it be worked in once a week? I think it would be about one of the greatest things we could have. And we're way behind time, and here we're going into the period of greater revenues for the state over the next 8 or 10 years, and then apparently a decline unless certain other things take place or something. If we don't have something like that, you know, maybe we'll never get it. That's my thought. I wonder if somebody could tell me where we really stand there.
Well, of course, there's been a study done on across the Gulf for the, I think what was originally looked at is something similar to the Columbia with heavier framing stabilizers on it, but essentially a vessel of that nature.
A Columbia that would work, you mean?
It would help if it would work on it.
What about Kodiak in that area?
My observations of the Cross Gulf are that it would be largely a freight hauler. I feel as though, with the exception of perhaps 2 months in the summertime, you'd have a hard time generating any passenger traffic on that vessel. Perhaps the driver of the vehicle and the balance of it would probably fly. That's our experience, really, on even the Tustamina's, is between Kodiak and Homer or Seward. Nobody rides that thing in, for the more majority of the time of the year, and that's the one reason that vessel is such a tremendous subsidized system.
It loses about half the money in the system.
It loses about 2.5. It loses the most in the system. Well, the county is the second. And all of these low passenger service areas can't generate a great deal of service or revenues, I should say. You'd be looking at, I think, a vessel that would cost $40 to $45 million. You'd be looking at shore construction costs, depending on if you use McGregor articulated ramp or something like that, still probably at least $2, maybe $3 million as a minimum in Yakutat, in some connection to the southwest, and perhaps even something down into here. And you'd be talking about a vessel that would probably cost about $7 million a year to operate. And you'd be talking about a vessel that probably would, because of our pricing situation, being a service, we obviously don't charge the same amount as, say, commercial fares would. So you'd probably be doing some harm to the existing transporters, such as the Great Lander, Tote, and Sealand. And I think at this point in time, at any rate, I haven't seen enough evidence that it would be worthy of a great deal of consideration.
I have to almost support that when I wrote the resolution of the study.
What about Kodiak and not the chain there in the beginning.
Certainly you would do harm, I think, if you tried to take the Testamina and expand it as an example.
What about Kodiak down the chain? What is this?
I think Commissioner probably, what the latest is on that, we've done some studying on it.
Well, of course, we've got the Salides Galliot study, but I think their first recommendation is that the state look toward building docking facilities in a number of those smaller locations that is a first consideration, and give capability to the private sector that's out there. And then, as a follow-on, if the service that they're receiving is still insufficient, so on, then to follow it up with an expanded marine highway system.
What about bringing the road down from Haines down to Mud Bay or someplace around there, and then run your day ferries back and forth between Skagway and Haines, and then you could run a shuttle across from Burners Bay over there, and then in the winter time, if you put in the right docking facilities, and then you had inclement weather, you could put one of the big ones right up there and dock it on the Haines side and let them go up the highway.
I think
wouldn't that save money in the long run?
I think that it's probably something that down the line, as the volumes grow, it may be a very good alternative to fleet expansion, and it may well serve now. Bill Hudson may be able to express himself on that better than I can.
The interim Southeast Transportation, which has been in the process now for the last 6 or 7 months. I just was reading over the weekend the interim report on that. I think you just got a copy of it too, Commissioner. And they discuss these various options of a road, as an example, straight up from Juneau to Skagway, and then a bypass over to Haines to link in all three of the cities all by roads. And then they basically look at three models. And one model would be basically the existing fleet, except doing everything else by shutters, what they're called surface skimmers, fast shuttle type operations. And then the second mode would be to run strictly a southeast ferry system from Prince Rupert to Juneau, and then let the people drive on from that area there, and then just use the shuttle skimmers on out to the remote communities. And the third one, of course, is to add more mainliners on the system and operate the whole thing from Puget Sound, with the exception of a shuttle into Prince Rupert, and basically the same as this. So,
you know,
the cost matters is a big thing.
There's another philosophical difference. You people are running the ferry system, I guess, because of the revenues. You're not running it for Alaska. You're running it for the majority of the tour people. Hell, an Alaskan can hardly get on the damn thing anymore. And I understand the constraints, Bill. I mean, I understand that very well. But at the same time, what good is a highway to the average guy that puts him off? Now that we've gone to Seattle, now you're going to stop it at Prince Rupert. Well, then you're going to have a lot of the people that are Alaskans, that are foot traffic, aren't going to travel on it.
Well, that's a very real concern, and the study does address that, Senator, and it doesn't really come to a conclusion.
I can't either.
I agree with you that we better do everything possible to try to put Alaskans on our books.
Well, I guess.
And we are doing that, Senator. We've been trying to open our books up to Alaskans well before we open them up to the national public. We have this constraint on the use of federal aid highway dollars that we cannot show prejudicial use of the system
right.
to any one users.
Right.
I think that there's only one way in which this thing could ever probably show some sort of preferential use to Alaskans, and that would be to establish like the school tax as an example. And if it created, like the school tax, $2.5 million, turn that around and create some sort of a preferential use or reduced fare to Alaskans to the equal amount, so that the system, you know, somewhere along the line, you got to segregate another form of payment to offset so that you're not showing preferential use. And I don't even know if that would work. I don't even know if it's legal. But we have taken away, when we arrived here, approximately 40% of the space was blocked. And we had on hand a letter from a New Jersey fellow that wanted to book every one of the cabins on all the Southeast vessels for 2 years, payment in advance. And obviously, we told him where he could go. And instead, we've taken and slowly brought the book passage down from the approximately 40% down to 15% on an average. We can't totally cut it out because there's all these other Alaskan industries that are tied into the tours.
That's true.
But
that's
it's a
tough. That's a tough question, I'll tell you that.
It's a hard one to play.
I know.
What percentage level you allow for it to accommodate the various interests that want to use it.
I was wondering, this is all getting into part of what I was talking about by asking about Cross Gulf. Because I hear a lot from people who would like to be able to travel Alaska within Alaska. And not have to go into Canada for their surface connection to the rest of the state. And if you were talking about running Cross Gulf out of Seattle, as far as I'm concerned, forget it. If the ship started in Seattle and made it once weekly or something like that, I just guessed it once weekly because of the long distance and the rough sea. And ended up at Kodiak with a stop, something like Kodiak, Seward, Juneau, Ketchikan, Prince Rupert, Seattle, or something like that. I don't know. Maybe that's too much for a big ship. But something that gave at least once a week scheduling between the southwest, south central, and southeastern Alaska. I think that would really serve Alaskans. And I guess it has to be a political decision. Because apparently under the present forms of economics that you keep studying on it, there's nothing shows up there. It has to change patterns or something. And I could see the possibility of a tax, like a school tax, that would be a transportation tax that would tie this, that would be for the purpose of tying this state together where it's uneconomical to do it otherwise.
You know, you could run it on a, I would, of course, I'm not a ferry guy on that, but run a summertime deal, you know. In the wintertime,
you know,
I don't think there'd be much traffic on it, John. But
I got a Hudson problem, but we lay up a lot of our ships in the winter.
Yeah, but I say,
The closest to blending that in, you know, into economics and the desires of Alaskans, I would say, would be to take the Columbia, for instance, put stabilizers on it, and use her during the summer months to cross the Gulf. But then in the winter months, they use it on a run out of Seattle. Not cross the Gulf during the winter months. But, you know, that would probably be unacceptable to a great number of people to have it only as a part-time service.
Well, I've tried for several years to take that winter trip. Maybe I will be less accused.
Me telling you,
you
go across that Gulf one time. Maybe be like Bill Ray out of a halibut boat out here in the Lee there.
You can ask Don. I did everything but raise heaven and earth to get on that thing with
Bernie Hagen told me you never get on the damn thing. Right, we're very ship across that Gulf. Get the amendments and bring it up first. Top of the meeting on Thursday and put it up.
Senator, Chairman, my problem with Cross Gulf Ferry is that I sailed out there for almost 5 years as a Coast Guard officer. That was my area, all the way from St. Elias to Seward, Alaska.
Yes, sir.
And let me tell you, I know every lump out there, and I just don't believe you'd have anybody riding that thing on a consistent basis.
Never.
How about with the right kind of ship?
Even the right kind of ship stabilizers and the right hull configuration, and now you're talking about this $45 million rig. It would be more comfortable, it would be all right in the summertime. The scenery is not all that grand because you have to sail about 10 to 15 miles off coast in order to come down. And you're not like going up through the beautiful inside passageway. I don't think it's an encouragement.
We will adjourn. And this meeting will continue with those amendments prepared, suggested and prepared for the top of Thursday's calendar before anything else takes place.
Start with your bills, Pat. From the Senate State Affairs committee please come to order. I want the right to reflect that Senator Huber, Senator Bradley, and Senator Willis are here. We have Senator Rohde here with us to testify on two bills that we have before this committee. Senate Bill 475 and Senate Bill
133.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Rohde. The first bill before you is a bill related to seal coating of roads in Spinard. This is an old friend of ours, an issue that has been through the Finance Committee several times. The Senate has always seen fit to appropriate these monies. The problem, other than the public inconvenience which results from the fact that the roads aren't coated, is that Anchorage has one of the highest particulate counts in the West with regard to its air quality. Spinard, unfortunately, is one of the leading contributors to this particulate count in the summertime. This would provide not only public improvement to the people that live and use Spinard roads, and almost everybody in Anchorage uses them because Spinard is the geographic center of Anchorage, but it would aid greatly in cutting down air pollution in the summertime. The Senate has supported me on this because we all know how important roads are to our constituents. The survey taken in Anchorage this fall showed that among those people who are concerned about public issues, that roads rank number one ahead of police protection. They're a public improvement that does not disappear like services. It's a good investment. And this is a very modest sum, more than we've appropriated in the past. I'm hoping that the governor will see fit, should this bill reach his desk, to sign it. I know we're all concerned about roads in our respective towns, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and other major and minor communities, and would ask for the committee's support on this. Again, it's an issue that each member is familiar with.
Any other questions?
Not by me, Mr. Chairman. I'm all for it. I traverse that road real often. And I know Senator Rohde has been working on it a long time. Governor's been giving me a little problem.
John, did you have any questions?
No.
Did you wish to make a motion?
That was 475. I don't have that one before.
475. I'm sorry.
Let me just look at it right quick. I read it this morning, yeah, same one.
I'll be happy to move it out with individual recommendations.
You want to change that to, if you're agreeable, do pass?
Perhaps the good senator might want to.
Oh.
I haven't any particular problems, but I thought maybe there's two senators that aren't here that might want to sign it some other way. That's the only reason I'm here.
That's a good idea, right.
Okay, now okay. The motion
go ahead,
for
then
us is to pass it out with individual recommendation.
I intend to sign Senator Rohde's bill, do pass.
Okay. Good.
I appreciate that, Senator.
And we
so do I.
Hearing no objections, then.
And you'll probably have a majority of do passes.
It needs it.
So the bill will be end up being do pass. But.
And after that one, DeBar. I was looking at Vern.
You mean we don't have to redo Clap Road? I'm always here and we got to do something to Clap Road.
Well, it's not quite as many people on that road. Not quite as much traffic.
As there is on DeBar?
That's right. DeBar and Spinard are terrible traffic.
Mr. Chairman, the next bill that's before you requires a brief explanation. Then I would request that the committee defer action on it and until next week.
Okay. If there's no objections, then we'll defer action on Senate Bill 433.
Mr. Chairman, I'll have some suggested amendments for the consideration by the committee, and we'll present them to you next Monday or Tuesday. Thank the committee for its indulgence.
424.
Okay, we have next before us Senate Bill 424, making fiscal year 78 appropriation adjustments of the Department of Military Affairs. Hi.
Good afternoon, Senator. I'm Lois Richardson, Administrative Officer for the Department of Military Affairs. what we would like to do is some of our funds that were appropriated for our capital improvements. One, I think it was either an oversight or something when the request went in, the Nome Armory Heating and Contingency Fund was in there, and it was just left out of the Finance Committee final report, and I think it was probably either an oversight or something. The Nome Armory Heat only cost $15,000 to repair, and the remaining balance we would like to be able to utilize in a contingency fund per our original request. We were appropriated $100,000 state money for the United States Property and Finance Office, which is being constructed out on Camp Carroll. We went another route instead of going through the state. The Corps of Engineers took over the entire construction of the project. We will only require probably $50,000 or less for some improvements that are not within the National Guard criteria. Their criteria is a little sparse. And basically that's what this bill will do, is to allow us to utilize funds appropriated for in one area in another area.
Okay, any questions?
Lois, are they doing away with the building on Mountain View Drive?
No, they won't do away with that building. Yes, we now have, I believe it's the 207th Arctic Reconnaissance Group and Group Headquarters, I think, they eventually.
That isn't much of a building.
No, it isn't.
Well, I guess they can use it for something.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you want this one next, Mr. Chairman. Do you want a motion on that?
Yes, let's take a motion.
We move to pass it out with individual recommendations.
I'll make a due pass.
I'm a due pass.
We're all due passes.
Okay. Okay. I understand. Yeah. Okay. The other two committee members may want to.
If they do, I won't give them a vote on something. This volunteer army ain't much army.
Do you want to get the Senator Ray's doghouse like I have to do?
Yeah, I've been in it before, but I got a couple of things he wants real bad right now, too, so I can reciprocate.
I don't have anything he wants.
I don't like that kind of politics, but if you do it to me, I have to do it back for justice's sake.
I think he probably doesn't have everything I want right now. Unless he's got nice, fresh, big king salmon in his freezer or something. If he does, I'd like to have him roasted. Have a roasted.
He's a character, isn't he? I was the only Republican to have old Bill on the committee, you know. He's smart. He comes up with things. Gets sure. a little uncouth sometimes, but that old wooden hammer I bought for $22, that straightens it out. Went down to Yukon Office Supply and bought me a cap.
You mean
to that's the only way you can shut him up sometimes.
Bill Ray? Okay, let's...
Bill Ray Gavel, that's what we
need. Don't work on
Senate me. Bill number 396 is before us. This is an act making fiscal year 70 appropriation adjustments, Department of Military Affairs, Public Protection, and providing for an effective date.
The adjustments in this this bill were brought about by we've had a free Audubon service through the military telephone network. Last May, the outgoing Juno was cut off. In June, they cut off Bethel, Nome, and Fairbanks. And now, just on the 15th of February, they cut out incoming calls to Juno. So we've had free toll service all the way along. This was all done with no notice. So now we desperately need some money to provide telephone tolls. There are some other small incidental costs, like $3,000 that we want to use to bring the travel request up to last year's actual. And we're utilizing this. We requested and received some money for the Educational Assistance Program. Unfortunately, that program has been very slow getting off the ground, and we feel we'll have enough in there to be able to fund our telephones without any additional requests for supplemental.
That's part of, Mr. Chairman?
No,
that's part of the austerity program, I guess. You know, General Boswell and General Bolton are called when they had the elimination of the funds for the military students, you know. university, and they didn't even know it was cut out. I don't know, I guess they don't notify even the big bosses until they commit a crime.
How much money do they save by taking them off of the Audubon?
I just wonder. I bet they don't save any.
Probably.
That amount will save.
Are there any questions?
I think they felt the traffic was stopped.
I'll move it out to individual recommendations, and I intend to vote due pass.
I do pass.
Unless we had somebody who wanted to be heard against it, didn't see anybody.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. Could we take just a short recess? I want to check on our two other committee members.
Senator Willis.
Senator.
Thank you. Senator Ray had some emergencies in three or four of these bills, including the one that's before us first, which is the Marine Transportation Commission, are his bills, and he couldn't be here, so I'd move and ask consent to recess until tomorrow's meeting, or 24 hours, whatever, or when you call the next meeting, and just hold over the whole calendar.
When is our next meeting?
Whenever he calls it.
Well, we can recess it for one day. I hesitate to...
There's four bills, and I don't know where he is now, but I know he had a couple emergencies, as I did. The reason I was late, it was impossible to get here before.
Well, I don't want you to set the meeting during tomorrow's resources meeting, because I want...
Well, I'll move is to recess it to the call of the chair, and then he can make those arrangements.
Could you meet in the morning?
Absolutely, sir.
Not 8:30, I hope.
No. Could you meet to before session?
Sure.
9 o'clock in meeting.
How many bills do we have?
9 o'clock
Mr.
in
Chairman?
Meetings room. What?
Yeah, how many? You're 9 o'clock.
Okay. Well, what we have before us, and Senator Ray has an interest in all the bills before us, and that number one is he's the prime sponsor on the
371.
That has to do with the Marine Highway.
Yeah, taking that before.
That's correct. And I held the hearings on that, so I don't want to move without him.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then number two, we do have the Capital Planning Commission request for the study. And it doesn't, you know, I would hesitate without Bill being here to comment as he appropriately should do. So. I have no objection, to...
I just think that ought to be a call of the chair, and he can inform everybody tomorrow morning if everybody was at their office by, say, 9 o'clock, we could call over, or you could call over, I suppose.
Okay.
Whatever
you
want.
Senator Ray...
At least fully informed.
Yeah, I will. Okay.
Thank you. I have a couple other things, too, I have to do, so please...